чаши своей ты. Чаши своей ты. One of the unique features of Parshas Vayetzei is that if you look in the Sefer Torah, you will notice something very bizarre. In every parsha, we know the way the Sefer Torah is written. At the end of each chapter, the end of each section, there is what we call psuchos and stumos, meaning the new chapter doesn't just continue on from where the last one left off, but there's a gap in the Sefer Torah. Either it's a psuchos, means it's open. The end of the line is completely open, and the new chapter begins on the following line. Or it's a stumos, which means the new chapter does begin on the same line, but there's a gap. So you see clearly the demarcation between chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, because there's either an open line, or at least a space before the beginning of the new chapter. Parshas Vayetzei, however, is an exception. Parshas Vayetzei, if you begin reading the parasha, and you keep reading, and you keep reading, and you keep reading, and you go on and on and on, it's a very lengthy parasha, you will notice in the Sefer Torah that there are no psuchos and stumos. The story just seems to go on and on and on and on, and there are no gaps in the story at all. The Sefer Torah, if anybody gets an aliyah this week to the Sefer Torah, you should have a look. You'll notice that there are no gaps. Parsha zu suma. The whole parsha is just closed, it just reads and goes on and on and on and on and on. And there are several interpretations as to why this would be the case. Why indeed is Parshas Vayetzei written without any gaps? And this is something that we want to discuss tonight. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the Mir Rosh Hashiva, he indeed discusses this point in his Sefer Sichas Musa. And by way of introduction, he points to the Gemara that we are all familiar with. There was somebody called Nochum Ish Gamzu. That's what he was known as. That's his name, Nochum Ish Gamzu. Why was he called that? So the Gemara says, because whatever happened to him, whether it looked good or bad, he always had the same reaction. Gamzu L'Tegel. And the story which we are of course most familiar with is the story that the Gemara recites. The Gemara tells us that on one occasion the Jews wanted to send a gift to the Caesar. So they asked Nochum Ish Gamzu to be the Shliach. On his way to the Melech of the Goyim with this gift, this box of precious diamonds and stones, overnight he stayed in an inn, and unbeknown to him, they removed all the diamonds and they replaced it with earth and sand. And he arrives eventually at the king's palace and makes this grand presentation. They open up the royal box and in it is earth. The king says, what a disgrace to the Malchus. Coming to be mechabed me, or you coming to be mevazen me? That's it. And he sentenced Nochum Ish Gamzu Lemisa, sentenced him to death. And Nochum Ish Gamzu's reaction was, Gamzu L'Teva, this is also for the best. All of a sudden, Eliyahu HaNavi appears to him and says, actually this earth is not just ordinary earth. This is the earth going back from Avraham Avinu's times. It's miracle earth. Take a club of earth in your hand, throw it, and miraculously it will convert into arrows. It's a super duper weapon. So the king listens to Nochum Ish Gamzu. He says, please, can I have a final request? Throw this earth and see what happens. And indeed it converts into arrows, and you realize it really is a magnificent gift. Really is a magnificent gift. So indeed it works out, indeed, Gamzu L'Teva. And the Gemara explains, the Gemara continues as a whole continuation to this story. But that's just an example of when things look very bleak. he said Gamzu L'Toiva, and that became his name, Nochum Ish Gamzu. We need to understand, why is it that he was named this title? And more so, isn't the main word really missing? He really should be called Nochum Ish Gamzu L'Toiva. You missed out the L'Toiva bit, that's the main bit. Nochum Ish Gamzu sounds like he is Nochum, the one who says this also. Gamzu, this as well. This as well what? You missed out the main part, which is Gamzu L'Toiva. Why isn't he called that? Nochum Ish Gamzu L'Toiva. So, let's present the Yesod as explained to us by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. He said it, the Kitzur. Maybe we'll be marish a little bit. He quotes a medrash. We know in the coming parashiyos how the whole dramatic story of Yosef unfolds. Gets thrown into the pit, he ends up in Mitzrayim, ends up in jail, etc., etc., etc. So Yaakov Avinu, his father, complains to the Rebbeinu Shalom and says, Loma Harayosem, why have you done this to me? Harayosem, from the word Ra, this seems to be bad. What's happening? Why is this happening to me? So the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds in the following way. He says, Ani Oifik, I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, am currently involved in actually coronating Yosef. This is not an overnight story, this is all part of a master plan. But he ends up in Mitzrayim, ends up in jail, the Sarah Mashkim has the dream, Yosef comes out, there's a hunger, etc., etc., and before you know it, Yosef is the Melech. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yaakov, you're complaining? You're complaining why I'm doing bad? I'm in the middle of setting up your son, Yosef, to be the Melech of Mitzrayim, which ultimately precipitates the whole Golos Mitzrayim, but then Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Esther Makos, and Kriyas Yamsuf, and Maimon Har Sinai. So Chaim Shmulevitz explains, and this is really the Yesod. Yaakov Avinu was, as it were, being criticized, because when he saw the events unfold at the time, but hadn't yet seen the full picture, then of course it's very difficult and maybe even impossible to see what's the purpose of this all. Why is my son Ben Yosef taken away? Why is he in jail? Why is he hated by the brothers? But if you only hang on in there until the end of the show, until the curtain finally closes, then maybe then it will make sense. But of course, if you look at each individual event in isolation, it doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason why should this be happening. But if you don't view it in isolation, but rather as a small piece in a very large puzzle, then all of a sudden it looks very different. Then it has an understanding. So he says, that's why Nochum Ish Gamzu was called just that. Nochum Ish Gamzu, what does the word Gamzu mean? Gamzu L'Toiva. How was it that Nochum was able to always have such a positive outlook? Even when things look bleak, he turns up at the palace with a box of earth? The answer is because he never looked at any individual event in isolation, but rather understood that this is Gamzu. This is an addition, this is something as an addendum to something else. Gam means also. You can only say also if there's a beginning, if there's an end. You can't say, if you put an apple in front of you, you can't say, this apple is also cold. Also as well as what? And the minute you say it's also cold, what you're clearly insinuating is that there's something else that's cold as well. That's what Nachum was always saying. I understand that no event must be viewed in isolation. Rather, it's Gamzu. It's part of a larger picture. I may see the larger picture, I may not see the larger picture, but I understand that it's not an episode which is freestanding, unrelated to what happens before, or after. Rather, it is Gamzu L'Toiva. And that's why he's called Nachum Ish Gamzu. We said that the word L'Toiva is missing. No, that's not the stress. The stress is not on the L'Toiva. The stress is on the fact that he recognized that everything is Gamzu. It's always an addition. It's always part and parcel of a larger master plan on the part of the Rebbeinu Shalom. Indeed, who is Nachum Ish Gamzu's big Talmud? Rebbe Akiva. So we know. What does Rebbe Akiva tell us? Rebbe Akiva was once in the night there with his chicken and the candle and the donkey, and the chicken gets killed and the donkey dies and the candle blows away, and he says, everything that happens is L'Toiv. Why? He has no idea. Why is that L'Toiv? All he do is wanted to learn, and he couldn't learn, he's got no candle. All he do is wanted to wake up in the morning to say Kriya Shema, he's got no chicken. Why is that L'Toiv? He has no idea. And suddenly we know, as the story unfolds, there's bandits in the town, and suddenly he realizes, wow, if I could have a chicken, I'd be heard, and if I'd have a candle, I'd be seen. So Rebbe Akiva, the ultimate Talmud of Nachum, where he also understands that if you view it in isolation, it makes no sense. Why would that be considered a positive thing, the fact that my candle went out? I have no idea. But I understand that it's part of a larger plan. It's Gamzu. It's part of an additional series of events which, when viewed in totality, makes a lot of sense. There are many, many examples of this. I will mention a few. In Parashat Kisito, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asked by Moshe Rabbeinu, Hoydieni no es derochecho. Please teach me your ways. What does that mean, please teach me your ways? So the Gemara in Brachas tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was in fact asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu the age-old theological question, which is, why is there tzaddik v'raloi and rosha v'toivloi? It doesn't seem to make sense. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer? If you look in a few psukim later, Pasuk Chof Gimel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'ro'isa es achoirai, ufonai lo yero. Literally translated, you will see behind me, but you cannot see my face. What does that mean? Says the Chassam Sefer, what it means is as follows, the exact principle we just discussed. If you want to know why Yosha V'Tevloi or Tzadik V'Raloi, you can only really ultimately ever have a realistic response to that question if you watch all the master plan of the world unfold, and after the events you could look back in hindsight, and with the benefit of retrospect you could say, ah, now it all makes sense. V'ra'isa es achoira, you will see after me. But uponai, my face, head on, lo yiro, you can't understand. And he cites as an example, and this is of course the most classic example, the Purim story. Most people are unaware, or maybe a lot of people are unaware, when we read the Purim story, we come to shul, and the Baal Korah takes about 40 minutes, unless you're in the Grosh shul, about an hour, to read the Megillah. Actually, how long did the Purim story take?
Years.
12 years.
Nine.
12 years.
Nine.
So when you're reading the story, you have to realize that this didn't just happen in a day or two. It certainly didn't happen in 40 minutes. This is over a decade of events. And you can imagine, if you're standing in the middle of the story, things may make no sense whatsoever. Why is Esther being taken? And why is Isaac there? And suddenly you watch all... Nothing makes sense. Where does Hashem's name appear in the Megillah? It doesn't, because you don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it means, ufonai lo yiro, face on, head on, you don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You get to the end of the story. Now look back and you realize every little detail, that little, tiny little episode of Bigthon and Seresh turns out to have a major part to play, and the fact that Achashverosh couldn't sleep at night had a big part to play. Everything makes sense. But when did it make sense? Not at the time. Not ponai, not head on. V'ro'iso es achoirai, after the event. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, you want to answer the question, Tadik Vara Loi Rosh HaVatog Loi, Uponai Loi Yiro. Uponai Loi Yiro. I think we've mentioned in the past the most magnificent moshel by Rav Shlomo Kluge. The very simple moshel that brings out the same point by the Chofetz Chaim. Let's mention both. Twice a year, on Tisha B'Av morning and Yom Kippur afternoon, we mention in the Kinnis and in Yom Kippur Musaf the Asara Harugei Malchus, the 10 Tanoim who were killed in the most brutal, savage way. Chazal tell us, and we actually mention this in the Davening, that the Malachim came to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They see Rabbi Akiva being tortured to death, and they said four words. What were the four words? Zu, Toira, Vezu, Schara. This is Toira, and this is the reward. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, a bas koil emerges, and the bas koil says, Im eshma koil acher. I hear one more word. Ahafrich es ha'olam. I'm going to turn the whole world into tohu bavohu, into desolation once again. Emptiness. What does that mean? And it reminds me when we're in school. To get punished by the teacher. That's it. The class has been detained for half an hour. We didn't understand why. Why are we getting punished? If there's one more word of complaint, you're going to get double punishment. Fine, but you haven't answered the question, sir. Okay, double punishment. You still haven't answered the question. Triple punishment. We couldn't say anything. You haven't answered the question. What does the Kodesh Baruch Hu mean? The Malachim L'chaira asked a very valid, pertinent question. Zu Teira V'zu Schara. What does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? One more word, I'm going to ruin the world. Okay? Kodesh Baruch Hu is the Kol Yochel. He could do whatever he wants. So how does that answer the question? So Rav Shlomo Kluge said the most magnificent mashal. He said, a king once decided that he wants to have made for himself the most exquisite cloak. Diamond studded, spun with golden and silver threads. This is going to be the cloak of all cloaks. So he hires a top tailor in the land and he says to him, listen, I'm commissioning you to produce for me the most expensive, the most magnificent cloak. Here's the key to my treasury. Money is no object. You could take any diamond, sapphire, ruby, emerald, golden thread, silver thread, whatever you like. There are no limits whatsoever. Just do me a favor. Whatever you take from the treasury, just write down in the ledger. We know exactly how much has been taken. But money is no object. Diamonds are no object. Golden threads are no object. Take whatever you want. And time is no object either. There's no rush. The more magnificent, the better. After a year of hard work, he finally produces this cloak and he comes to the king, and indeed, it's just exquisite in nature. Gleaming and shining and just a phenomenal masterclass. The king is thrilled when all of a sudden, one of the king's advisors approaches him and says, you should know that this tailor breached your trust. Whatever he wrote down in that ledger, he took this and he took that, not all of it went into the cloak. Half of it was pocketed, went into his own private bank account. You trusted him, but you overtrusted him. The king calls in the tailor and says, that's it, off with your head. I thought you were a loyal patriot. I thought I could rely on you. And they tell me that you've stolen from the state, you've stolen from my treasury. He says, I haven't stolen anything at all. What do you mean? But I've been told by my advisors that whatever you wrote didn't all go into the cloak. Some of it went into your back pocket. And he said, it's not true. Whatever I took is in that coat. The king said, well, unless you can prove it, you have to be sentenced to death. So the tailor says to him, I can prove it. But there's only one way. The only way I can prove it is if I strip the coat thread by thread, pull it all apart, and I'll line up every thread of gold and every thread of silver and every thread of silk and every diamond and every sapphire, and I will line it all up You'll have a whole long row, a whole street full of threads and stones and precious diamonds, and then you'll be able to count it one by one, and you'll see it's all accounted for. But I'm sorry to tell you, as long as I don't strip that cloak apart, it's not possible to see. Some is woven and interwoven, and it's inside and it's outside, it's in the back, it's in the front, you can't see it all. You want me to strip it all apart, pull it to threads, and then you'll be able to see the whole thing? That's absolutely fine with me. That's the only way I can produce evidence to support my innocence. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling the Malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did answer the question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will turn the world back to Toyu Vavoyu. Where does it say in the Torah Toyu Vavoyu? Parshas Bereishis. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you can't understand this in isolation. If you want me to rewind the clock all the way back to Toyu Vavoyu from day one until the very last day, I will have it all placed in front of us and you'll see the whole picture, then finally you'll understand how it all makes sense. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't acting chas v'sholom like the teacher who says, write another word and you're all going to be detained because I don't really have a good answer. Chas v'sholom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling them, it's not possible for you to understand unless I turn the world back to Toyu Vavoyu, rewind the tape, play every day and every chapter and every month and every year from the beginning of time to the end, and then you'll see how this takes its place in the overall puzzle, which is Olam Hazeh. The Chofetz Chaim, Kedarkei Bakodesh, all the Mesholim of the Chofetz Chaim were so beautiful in their simplicity. The Chofetz Chaim, and I think anybody who has connections with a shul can relate to this. The Chofetz Chaim says the Moshel of the guest who turns up in a shul one week and he's surveying events and he approaches the Gabbai at the end of davening and says, listen, I'm not a regular here, it's the first time I've ever davened here, to be honest. I'm just a visitor, but if you don't mind me saying, the way you run your shul is totally ridiculous. Why do you say that? Because I notice all the people who got aliyahs this Shabbos morning, they all sit on the left hand side of the Beis HaMedrash. What a bizarre, what an absurd way of running a shul. Well, you only get an aliyah if you sit on the left hand side. You sit in the middle, sit in the front, sit in the back, sit on the right. What a ridiculous way of running a shul. Says the Gabbai, Shaita Shabayim, you weren't here last week. Last week we gave all the people on the right hand side, and the week before the people in the front of the shul, and the week before the people on the back of the shul. Of course, if you come one week and you see the people who get the aliyahs are only the ones on the left, that doesn't make sense. Come for a few months and you'll see everybody gets an aliyah. But it's the same, you say. We have mentioned also in the past deep, profound one-liner by the Chiddushi Harim, where we all say on Seder night that we must proclaim the three most important parts of the Seder night are what? Pesach, Matzah, Umorah. But do we ever stop and think that one second, the order doesn't make sense? Pesach, Matzah, Umorah? Morah was at the end, Morah was at the beginning. It should have been Matzah, Umorah, Pesach u'matzah. Why is Pesach u'matzah and only at the end does Morah get a mention? Says the Chiddush Harim, he says, because sometimes it's only after the Pesach and the Matzah that you can really understand the Morah. Phenomenal insight. Phenomenal insight. As you're going through the events, Morah was indeed first, but nobody understood why. By a Moroes Chayim, it says Moshe Rabbeinu approached them, Moshe didn't listen, nobody understands, doesn't make sense, that's it. After the Pesach and after the Matzah, then, and only then, with the benefit of hindsight, can you understand what the Moroes is really about. When Klal Yisrael cross the Yam Suf and they sing the Shira, what's the first word of the Shira? Oh, Oz Yashir Moshe. You know what the Medrash says? Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Parashas Shemois, you sent me to Paray to ask for Klal Yisrael to be released. And what happened? Things didn't get any better. In fact, they got worse. And I complained. And what did I say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? May Oz, same word, may Oz Vosi El Paray, since coming to Paray, it's only got worse. So why did you send me? That was the question that Moshe Rabbeinu asked. So Moshe Rabbeinu, four parashiyos later, says, I use the word Oz to complain, I use the same word Oz now to thank and give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know what the chat is? What does Oz mean? How do you translate the word Oz?
Then.
That was the whole problem. May Oz Bosiel Pari. If you look at the event as then, what's happening now, today? Doesn't make sense. Absurd. You told me to go to Paray to try and procure the release of Klal Yisrael, and what happens? Not only am I unsuccessful, I'm just successful in bringing about the exact opposite. Things went from bad to worse. So may Oz Bosiel Paray, then, if you look at it through a little window, at that moment in time, I complained. Now looking back, it all makes sense. Imagine Paray would have said, yeah, fine, they can go. Yeah, they can go. There would be no Esther Makris. There would be no Kiddush Hashem. There would be no Kriyas Yam Suf. There would be no Kiddush Hashem. Now looking back, it all makes sense. Paray had to refuse. Ah, you refused. You made matters worse. Okay, welcome Dan, Svardeya, Kinim, all of the Esther Makris, the Kriyas Yam Suf. Now it all makes sense. But I understand that what was really the root of the problem, that one word, Oz, I was looking at it as then. You can't look at it as then. You know, if you ever, someone sends you a picture, someone emails you a picture, magnificent photograph. So you go to that little icon, the magnifying glass, where you can blow up the picture. 100%, 120, 150, 80, 300, 400. And suddenly you look at it, doesn't look that magnificent at all. Turns out you're looking at somebody's left nostril. Nothing magnificent about that. But then you shrink the photo all over again and you see that has a small part to play in the overall picture, which indeed has its beauty. But if you look at it as, oh, as that little point in isolation, it makes no sense. If we really want to address the age-old question, the oldest question of Tzadik V'Ra'aloi, then really we need to open Sefer Iyos. Sefer Iyos? What's Sefer Iyos? Sefer Iyos, we know, is a difficult Sefer. Iyos was a Tzadik, some say in fact he was Moshe Rabbeinu. It says he was married, he had 10 children, he had 7 boys and 3 daughters, he had wealth, and then it all got taken from him. He loses all his children, and he loses all his wealth, and he has absolutely nothing else. And he doesn't understand. Thank you, Shukir, thank you so much. And he doesn't understand why this happened to him. Most of Sefer Iyos is a lengthy Sefer, over 40 prokim. About 35 prokim is the discussion that Iyov has with his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sofar, and they say to him, Iyov, maybe you weren't such a tzaddik after all. Maybe that's why you got this punishment, and that punishment, and this punishment. And he's unconvinced, and he refuses to believe, doesn't accept, it's not true, I know I'm a tzaddik, why is this happening? All of a sudden, you get to Perek Lamed Ches, and suddenly, for the first time, Vaya'an Hashem es Iyov. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps into the picture. And he says to him, tell me, Ve'esholcha, I'd like to ask you a few questions, please. Eifoi ho'yisa, where were you, Iyov, b'yosti oretz, when I created the world? Funny question, where was I? I wasn't born. Hagid in your data, tell me if you understand how I created the world. What's it based on? Do you know anything about the Koich Ve'Boiker, about the stars? Do you know anything about darkness? Do you know anything about light? Whole quiz. Hisboinanto ad rachave oret. Have you ever thought about all of the globe, the four corners of the globe? Do you know anything about sholeh, snow? Borov, hail? What has this got to do with anything? Kodesh Baruch Hu just fires question after question. Do you know anything about rain? Do you know anything about water? Hayodato chukos shomayim. Do you know all the rules of the heavens, the galaxies? And this goes on to two or three prokim. The animals. Hayodato eis ledeth. Do you know when children are born, when they die? Do you know anything about that? Until Perek Membeis, this goes on and on. Kodesh Baruch Hu fires question after question after question. And Perek Membeis, all of a sudden, right at the end, Eov responds, Vaya'an Eov. So now Eov has his turn. He says, Yodati Pikol Pichon, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you are the phenomenal chaos of the world. V'lo yibotze mimcha mezimo, and there's nothing that you cover to. V'lo yoven, and I don't really understand. Then the prophet says, and shortly after that, it says he had more children. And he died a happy man. End of story. A bit of an anticlimax of the whole sefer. And you finish the sefer and you're thinking, what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking him? What did Eov respond? Why was he all of a sudden placated? End of the story. There is a very famous book written by a conservative rabbi, Rabbi Kushner. Why do bad things happen to good people? Rabbi Kushner, who himself is a Jew, a conservative rabbi, he himself was confronted by terrible yisurim. He had a child, a young child, who suffered from a severe degenerative disease. At the age of 4 or 5, his child was like an old man. At the age of 6 or 7, his child passed away. So all of a sudden, he's facing this question, as he entitled his book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? So he analyzes Sefer Eov in his book. And I must be honest, I've never seen the book or read it, but this is what I've heard. And he says, his interpretation of the end of Sefer Eov is the following. And this is his comfort, and this is how he finds solace. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him the sky and the sea, and the plants, and the mountains, and the rain, and the day, and the night, and the dark, and the sun, and the stars, and the birds, and the plants. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to you, look what a wonderful, magnificent world that I've created. I am the God of goodness. Badness? That comes from a different God. That's nothing to do with me. As you can see, look at the world that I've created. It's full of goodness. So Eov, you don't need to be upset with me. You were a tzaddik. And indeed, everything good in your life has come from me. The badness has come from a different God. That comes from a different force, the force of evil. Oh, so Eov is delighted. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't hate me after all. End of story. 4 million copies sold of his book. Now, whilst, of course, we empathize with anybody, especially a fellow Jew who suffers in that way, but nonetheless, as ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, we have to state unequivocally that that warped, distorted interpretation of Sefer Eov is nothing short of unfiltered apikorsis. Total apikorsis. There's two gods, there's the god of Toiv, and there's the god of Ra. So Tzadik v'ra aloi and Rosh v'toiv loi, don't worry. Kodesh Baruch Hu, our God, only produces good. There's a different God. Don't worry. Absolute apikorsis. I asked a friend last night, do me a favor. do a little search for me online, some of the reviews on this book of why bad things happen to good people. So one person says, yep. He writes that God is unable to stop bad things from happening. He also states that God cannot defy the laws of nature. I stopped reading at this point, says the reader. I chose to read this book, says another reader, after experiencing a recent loss of a loved one. Not a good idea. I was looking for comfort and did not find it. The author continuously wrote of how God is powerless to do anything to help anyone. He wrote of how prayer is of no use, except to give you strength to continue on. He kept reiterating how God is as sad as we are over the evil and pain in the world, but he is powerless to do anything about it. The author's continuous message throughout the book appeared to be summed up as, don't bother praying or hoping for your suffering loved ones, God can't do anything to help them. Etc., etc., etc. Rahman al-Islam. How do we understand the end of Sefer Iyov? The Mefarshim explain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Iyov, look at the world. Do you know, where were you when the world was created? Do you see the mountains? Do you see the rain? Do you see the birds? Do you see the plants? Do you see the children? You see daylight, you see the sky, you see this colossal planet that is Olam Hazeh. Do you see this enormous picture which comprises billions and billions and billions of details? Understand therefore that it's not shaykh to understand. Rather than viewing it in isolation, as if I am a good person, what's happened to me? Why do bad things happen to good people? Understand, like what Shlomo Kluger told us. You have to rewind the tape. So you go right back to the beginning of time. See how every little piece of the billions and billions and billions of pieces in this enormous jigsaw puzzle. Can you possibly understand how everything takes its place? I understand finally that I can't understand. So I don't have any complaints against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With that, he dies a happy man. That's really the story that we've been talking about. That's Nochum Ish Gamzu. It's Gam. It's a small piece in a phenomenally large puzzle. So it's Gam. So there's Toiv. I don't always see the Toiv. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I sometimes understand that I just can't understand. Let's come back now to Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Parshas Ki Tzeitzei reads as an ongoing story. There's no psuchos, there's no stumos. Parshas Vayetzei. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, what is Parshas Vayetzei all about? It's the Parsha of Golos. The Omos HaKadoshim are in Golos. Yaakov is in a foreign place. Years and years surrounded by Rishoyim, not in his own home, Yisuin, Nisyonis, one after another, nothing seems to make sense. What is the Avoida? What is the Avoida of Nisyonis and Golos and darkness? Keep reading. There's no gaps. There's no Psuchos. There's no Stumos. Understand that it's one long story. Because if you stop in the middle, what do you ask? Why do bad things happen to good people? It doesn't make sense in isolation. But the parasha of Golos has to be written and read as one long story. Keep going, keep going, keep going. If you walk out in the middle of the show, you say, I don't understand what the point is. Stay till the end. Maybe then it'll make sense. That's how Rav Chaim Shmulevitz interprets Parashas Vayetzei. We say every Friday night, we'll say tomorrow night in Hashem, Lahagid Baboiker Chasdecho. In the Boiker, when it's light, what do we see? We see all the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What about in the Laila? Dark, difficult, not everything makes sense. Ve'emunos Chabalenos. Then we have our faith. What is our faith based on? Our faith is based on Gamzul Teva. with a stress being on the gam, not so much on the teva. That this is not to be viewed in isolation. We are but a small, little microcosm of the enormous planet that exists around us. And we have our part, a very important role to play. But ultimately, it's a small role in the grander scheme of things. In order to really understand, you have to strip that coat thread by thread. Or you have to come to the shul every week to see how the aliyahs are distributed. Or you have to wait till the end of the Purim story to see how it really makes sense. Or Moshe Rabbeinu has to wait till Kriyas Yam Suf. Or we have to wait till the Pesach and the Matzah to understand the morrow. And Eoiv is told, therefore you are a tzaddik. Why this has happened to you, you have to understand it in context of the entire world as a whole. That is the avodah of Golus. When there's no breaker, and when things don't obviously make sense to us, and we cannot see the simple understanding of why things are happening to us, then the avodah of Parshas Vayetzeh is to understand that there's no psuchis and sumis. There's no end of chapter 1, and then the new beginning of chapter 2. Chapter 1 leads you straight into chapter 2, which leads you straight into chapter 3, and so on and so forth. It's a larger story, and that is how the Chacham Sofer understood the pasuk "V'ro'iso es achoyrai." For uponai, head on, lo yirol. Things don't always make sense. Eoiv taught us that sometimes we just have to understand that we don't understand, but that itself is an understanding. And with that, says the Sofer Eoiv, he died a happy and content man. We daven, of course, we daven every day that we shouldn't be tried. We shouldn't be tested, shaloi al-dei nisoyen. But what has to steer us through nisoyen in the choyshech is emunos chabaleilos. The emuna which comes from the fact and the understanding that this is gamzu. That is not to be viewed on as each individual event in isolation, but rather as a long parshas vayetze. The story goes on and on and on, and it's all being controlled and directed by the master planner, the chvoido be'atzmoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you.